Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
I'll tell you what, a show doesn't get much more stacked than the one we have for you today for the next couple of hours here. Wow. Strong guest list, including Sports Illustrated, their senior writer, Greg Bedard. He's going to join us at 2 p.m. He's going to talk about that much talked about piece that he did about Browns head coach Mike Pettine and the fallout from that. And Greg Bedard has a lot of interesting response already that he's put out there on social media. We're going to get into it now. Some of the grief that the head coach of the Browns has taken, and Greg's going to set the record straight on some of that stuff. The Browns training camp schedule has been announced. That leads our Ohio Business Machine's Hot Topics of the Day, and we're going to tell you about the camp, which, of course, opens in Berea on July 26th. That date is out there, and break down the schedule of camp events. Kevin Griffin, Vice President of Fan Experience and Marketing for the Browns, will be with us at 1:40 to talk in greater detail about the camp schedule. We're also going to hear from Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal. Akron will be the site of the Family Day, August 2nd, Browns Family Day, a little different format. It's been mostly a nighttime event in previous years. This time around this year, it's going to start at 11:30 a.m. in Akron, and we're going to talk about that with, among other things, we'll talk about it with Kevin Griffin, but we'll get Nate Ulrich's take on it as well from the Akron perspective. And the reason they're doing it that way is because on that same day, the Pro Football Hall of Fame has its induction ceremony that night at Fawcett Stadium in Canton. So those two events juxtaposing nearby, want to kind of keep some distance between them from a time standpoint, because football fans are football fans. They want to see everything. Show up for the Family Day and then head over to Fawcett Stadium for the great induction ceremony. That's where I'll be that night. Also, we're going to have Kevin Jones, staff writer for Browns.com, ClevelandBrowns.com. A lot that Kevin has to talk about, not just the camp setup, but he'll get into what he's been hanging out with the rookies of this football team the past few days as they've worked with some of the Utes, some of the kids.
The Utes!
Over at First Energy Stadium. And my man, my guy, Nathan Zagora, and I'll tell you what, brother, we got a big show today. We got a lot of stuff to cover.
We did, and we got Dakua joining us for a little Friday forecast as well, so a lot to get to. And you know what? It's funny. There was one comment that was made in this, all this kind of the kerfuffle that has brouhaha that has emanated from the interview with Greg Bedard and Coach Mike Pettine. And of course, Greg Bedard, as Vic said, will join us at 2 p.m. Eastern. And he's not happy, by the way, about what's happened. He wrote about it at Monday Morning Quarterback. He's done some interviews. He'll do one with us as well. Not happy with the way he feels things have been blown out of proportion. But one of the things that I thought was the most interesting was that Antonio Cromartie said that Mike Pettine's doing this because nobody's talking about this team. Well, hello, Antonio. This is the most talked about team in the NFL right now and has been ever since they drafted Johnny Football.
Nobody's
so
talking about
I don't
now.
Believe it was done to draw more attention to the Cleveland Browns.
God, no. No, it was not. And I don't even think there's – I'm not even sure there's necessarily a purpose behind it. What has been said – about Mike Pettine is that this is, quote, some sort of bad look for him as a head coach, and that he's, by bringing these things up, he's violating a code within the coaching fraternity to talk about things that happen that maybe coaches can talk about among themselves, about game plans getting out there. There is zero big deal to this, just for the record. In terms of its level of impact with the teams involved, he said the Patriots – having a copy of the Jets game plan because it was something that was given to Nick Saban, and then therefore Nick Saban would give it to his old buddy Bill Belichick. But all of that is far overblown because, first of all, game plans, plays as they're designed and structured. I can tell you firsthand, I know well, not, and I will speak before I ever set foot in Berea in the Browns building. Coaches that I've known and have worked with and covering this league for a long time have shown me what they've gathered, the intelligence they've gathered from other teams. A very good friend of mine, a former assistant for the Buffalo Bills, had the play call sheets, copies of them, the laminated sheets that other teams used that he acquired, copies of them through the years.
Right.
I have a couple of copies of myself. Just for posterity's sake, the play sheet that Mike Holmgren used, and this was before I met Mike, Mike Holmgren with the Browns, but Mike Holmgren used when Brett Favre was his quarterback in Green Bay, and it was just sort of a neat keepsake thing that had all the descriptive plays and such. That was in circulation for a long time, and I'm just saying there isn't anything new under the sun. These guys do get this material, this information. It doesn't what is helpful. And I said, well, what really helps you with this? They said not truly much of anything that's going to let you get ahead of the as a defense, ahead of the offense, or vice versa. What you really need is, you know, the count and those sort of things, the cadence, things that are changed up, any sort of audibles and changes, what those mean. That is more valuable than the actual game plan itself.
Of course, and I think there's been a big barrage of NFL people who know what these playbooks are and know what's contained in them, saying that this is much ado about nothing and that it is kind of a joke. And it was like Tom Brady was kind of busting chops. Mike Pettine was busting chops. So basically, that's what it was and not a big deal. So it's funny how these things – and listen, I get it, right? There's not a whole lot to talk about. Rex Ryan and Bill Belichick made their comments, so it's something that has become somewhat of an issue. If you have basically 10% of the coaches in the NFL talking about one issue, it becomes a little bit of a to-do. Yeah. But, you know, it's very interesting, and Greg Bedard, to his credit, is very unhappy with the way that things have developed, said, you know, if I knew this would have happened, I probably wouldn't have even put it in the article. And it'll be interesting to get his take now today as even more time has passed and he's digested more of the commentary that's out there, and we'll get to do that at 2 p.m. Eastern. We do want to hear from you, though, as we talked about, ladies and gentlemen, because we do have the training camp schedule being released, and it all kicks off July the 26th, Saturday. Mike Pettine, it looks like, will be favoring an earlier practice than certainly last year when they were about, what, 4 o'clock in the evening last year?
I'm loving this now.
Yeah, I do too. 9:30 in the morning will be the training camp practice. Begins, as I said, on the 26th. There will be 13 practices in Berea Family Day in Akron. And one of the things we want to know from you guys is, and number one, you planning on attending training camp? What are some of your favorite training camp memories? Let us know at 216-578-0850. I'm pretty fired up, by the way, about this training camp. I liked it. It's early because the great thing for me and you, Notorious, is it's going to happen, and then we're going to get to go right on the air. I love that.
Yep. No, this is made – I think they did this with us in mind. I'm sure they did. I'm sure Mike Pettine said this is all about CBD. Let's get him on and off the field and set
he
it
knows.
Up for Nathan and
Vic. He understands.
He knows. He knows what the priorities are. Okay, he didn't give us a single thought. But anyway, the fact that it does start at 9:30 and runs till 12:10, that's what the schedule is set up for each of the days that it's in Berea, it is really helpful, I think, from a broader standpoint of the public, the majority of the public that wants to know about what's happening but can't be there, won't be there. They can follow it, of course, all the doings on clevelandbrowns.com. But then tuning into shows like this and everybody else's takes and opinions that will be out there in the media, you're going to get, I think, a pretty good feel for how things are going on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to what happened last year where we would be on the air and then practice would be going on, you know, later in the day or after we got off the air.
Right.
And you didn't really have a chance to digest things until a whole other news cycle 24 hours later. So from a very selfish media standpoint, I'm very happy with this setup. And I think, too, for players, getting them out there on the field a little bit earlier in the day from a weather standpoint might be a bit lighter in terms of temperatures and maybe not as intense. I think the two schools of thought are either get them on the field earlier or get them on really late in the day. Just try to avoid that midday intensity of sun and heat and keeping everybody happy and healthy that way. Sean in Medina wants to join us right now. Sean, what's up?
Happy Friday, fellas.
Good. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Football Friday to you, brother.
Yeah, I'm stoked that Pettine said that about Belichick and the Jets. You know? I mean, let's stir it up a little bit. Let's get it going.
Well, I don't know how much it really stirs things up. I'll say this. With regard to Mike Pettine and his relationship with his whatever he was, former mentor, the guy who got him into the league, Rex Ryan. I think that's an interesting dynamic because made it pretty clear on the record, very clear on the record, that he's not, quote, in a good place with Mike anymore. So wherever the relationship is, it is. And maybe that little bit of friction isn't the worst thing to happen. And I think for Mike's sake, as he branches out now, he's a head coach for the first time.
Maybe sometimes you want to cut those cords with those who kind of brought you along and maybe liked it a little better when you were the assistant guy and then the shadows guy. Well, now Mike is a head coaching peer of Rex Ryan's.
I'm just bummed out a little bit, to be perfectly honest, that the Jets are not on the schedule this year.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
I would like to see this, you know, this be able to come to a head. I think that would be very fun, you know, in this day and age where we'll analyze everything from the post-game handshake to the pre-game handshake. That would be a fun one. I'm sure people would have a lot of fun analyzing as well.
A la Belichick and Eric.
Of course. Yeah, of course. So, you know, it is, again, as we said, much ado about nothing, I think, ultimately. And we will have, obviously, Greg Bedard, who penned the article, interviewed Mike Pettine with us at 2 p.m. Eastern, which will be, again, I think a lot of fun, a little bit illuminating as well. There's another item I wanted to touch on today that I thought was a very good one as well, and that's Joe Hayden was on the really big show earlier today and basically said his advice to Johnny Manziel is to get what he called a phone valet, which is somebody who makes sure that nobody is getting their phones on you. Check your friends, check your friends' phones, put your phones away. Someone who's just like kind of, you remember when Jerry Glanville would talk about the get back coach?
Mm-hmm.
He needs a phone guy, a guy who's
phone
on,
back.
A phone back guy. Get your phones back, get them away, no more videos, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to do, and by the way, he also needs to chill out a little bit. So with the combination of those two things, I think we'll have a very nice, hopefully very quiet off season between now and training camp when it starts on the 26th.
Yeah, I like the advice from the older teammate who I think clearly gets the environment in which Johnny can find himself, even if he can't fully identify with having all the spotlight on him as an individual. And Joe gets his fair share, but nobody can really compare or feel a sense of equal attention that Johnny Manziel's dealing with. But it's good advice from an older teammate to a younger one saying, yeah, kind of take it easy now and keep yourself out of these circumstances. That will help you. And also use the resources that you have. And he has a lot. There are a lot of people that are supposedly there on his behalf, making sure that he's getting kind of the best out of this whole experience. And most of it ties into the marketing and to the, you know, to monetizing, I think, what he's all about as a player, as a namesake. And that's fine. I don't begrudge him an ounce of that. And that's a good thing to have that sort of ready. But make those people also work on your behalf and make yourself work with them in a way that does kind of keep the look good or you know, cut it down. I would be so thrilled. And I'm going to sit here and say I'm counting on now, over the next several weeks, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm leaning in the direction, given what I understand the communication has been from Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer to Johnny Manziel, that these next several weeks will be quiet Manziel weeks, that we should not see anything in the news, at least let me say beyond next week, because there is the rookie symposium. There will be some media exposure and such coming up that the NFL oversees at our facility in Berea when the NFC and AFC rookies gather as part of their whole week-long event that's coming up in Aurora next week. But beyond that, I'm talking about the when it's truly shut down after that point. I really don't want to hear about or see any more Johnny incidents.
Agreed. We need another Johnny incident, like we need another Costa Rica goal against Italy in the World Cup. Come on, what's going on with Italy right now? Down 1-0, notorious.
My guys are letting me down, I know. My countrymen.
I know. Maybe they didn't have Italian food too. Was one day too early, apparently.
They didn't have, you're right. I was going to say, they needed the marinara and everything we had going for us yesterday.
That's right.
At the cafeteria, the meatballs and the sausage, all good stuff.
And the sausage, indeed.
But, no, as far as back to training camp, and what will be interesting, what I'm looking forward to is how this time will be utilized, because in many ways, I mean, we're still dealing with a young team. We're still dealing with a situation where younger players are going to be asked to do more for a football team, which has been truly the theme of each Browns team of the last few years. What I want to see is how this particular coaching staff, Nathan, makes use of these guys and tries to makes coach up the younger players. What sort of individual drills? Because I think this is where it'll get more intense. The first part of camp is a review of what happened through the offseason. And then thereafter, that usually is a matter of days. That's only a couple of maybe two or three practices at the most where they do more review than new stuff and install stuff. Sure. And take it a step further. I want to see how the individual coaching goes with each player. And I think we could say right now, we've seen guys coached up pretty well, make progress. Justin Gilbert showing some progress as time went on. Pierre Desir as you got to the end of camp. Johnny Manziel as it got to the last and latter part of that mini camp. What will be the next steps? And that'll be the first thing I'm interested in seeing once training camp begins.
I'm excited to see the pads get on. I want to see the pads on. I want to see some hitting. I want to see how the offensive line responds once they can actually drive defenders back and kind of just see things take shape with real football. And you're right. How do these young guys who are adapting to the speed of the game also then adapt to the physicality of the game at this level? Because it is a little bit more physical. Guys are bigger, stronger, faster once the pads come on. I think that's going to be very exciting to see. And obviously we know that the pads don't get to come on every single day. But those days when they do, it'll be, I think, very good, very exciting to see for this team. Also, I want to know what's going on with the Josh Gordon thing. Is Josh Gordon going to be in camp? Are we going to have a resolution to this before camp? And we got a question actually on Twitter about it. People wondering, you know, if we've heard anything on the Josh Gordon front. And I'll just say what I've heard. There is a sense that the fact that it is taking this long is good news. Mm-hmm. Not that there will be no suspension, but that perhaps it will be a reprieve off of the 16 games, maybe down to the 8 or 6 variety or even 4. But there is a sense of optimism that whatever is being said in the appeals process on Gordon's side must have some merit that the NFL is looking into and trying to hammer this out where they know that they are kind of foolproof and solid on their side. And maybe there have been some holes poked into it by this appeal. But the word that I've gotten is that there is a sense of some level of optimism that it might not be the entire season for Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I think that is – I'm with you on that. And I'm hearing the same type of thing that maybe that, you know, that number of something less than a full season is there, and that the longer this goes on, the better the news could be from that standpoint, if that's how we want to frame it. I think any time that he misses is a bad thing, and it'll be a blow to this team no matter what. So, you know, it call it maybe a lesser degree of bad news, but it's still going to be bad news. That said, I agree with you. I think how practices are handled from a pass receiver standpoint with him in there, you know, on the field, knowing, let's say very likely that it could be as much as half a season, or let's even use the what we could perceive as the least scenario of, let's say, a half dozen games. Hey, that's a lot of time that somebody that he's not going to be playing and somebody else is going to be playing. And how much time do you devote in practice to getting that replacement ready? What right. will the look at receiver be? And by this time, too, where is Miles Austin? Where is he in regard to his recovery from the chronic hamstring problems he has? This team has been working to try to get that resolved these last couple of weeks. I know it's not a two-week solution for this guy, but what's his status? Where is he going to be once we get into training camp? Because you got to see him out there. We got to see who number one is going to be. Give us a feel for that and how everybody else kind of complements that receiver role.
Well, and you bring up a great point. Miles Austin, I did get an opportunity to talk to him down in the locker room. He says he is running at full speed and feels great, looking forward to getting out there in training camp. But you're right. Not only have we not seen Miles Austin, we haven't seen Nate Burleson. So two of the guys that I think are going to be counted on to play big roles in that veteran-type spot, those guys we haven't seen yet. So seeing them in training camp, what can they bring? Can Miles Austin be a B-plus player for us, which I think is all really he needs to be with or without Josh Gordon? Can we get Nate Burleson to be that solid veteran presence? Who of the young guys is going to step up at times throughout camp? I would have said Willie Snead looked like the best undrafted free agent receiver we had. There were other times where I'd say, no. Jonathan Krause was the best undrafted free agent receiver that we had. Then there were other times where Chandler Jones is making some plays. So You have young guys that need reps because you're going to have one of those guys fighting. And then the other guy that I can't wait to see, the guy who's become a legend without even playing at all here in Cleveland, is Charles Johnson. And I can tell you this, there is no doubt that this coaching staff and the front office of this team believes that they have something in Charles Johnson, and right. They're just as excited as all the fans out here to see him in action. So between Austin, Burleson, and Johnson, and Travis Benjamin, there are four guys who are going to finally start playing football at the wide receiver position for this team that we have not seen at all yet this year.
Which is really amazing because, when you know, to think about that, we've gone through this whole offseason and not seen any of those guys, and then to see them in training camp, it's going to be like a whole new receiving core. And all of a sudden, everything that we thought the receiving core was for this past month and a half or so will take on a whole different look once training camp starts. We'll see where Travis Benjamin is in his recovery from the ACL, but I'm especially interested, as you mentioned, in both Austin and Burleson. And Burleson started to come on late with things. I think we're going to be, in all likelihood, seeing him out there first. The exact date on Austin is still a little bit of a mystery, but we'll see how that plays out. Don in Ashland has called us now at 216-578-0850. Don, what's up?
Hey, Jason and Vic. How's it going today, guys?
Good, man.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, I have a question for the two of you, and it's something I haven't really heard anybody talk about as far as Cleveland sports or anything like that on the media. You know, with this whole Josh Gordon situation and scenario that's been playing out, and over the course of his career, and that we talk about him getting slaps on the wrist and so on and so forth, and from the outside looking in, you kind of look at it as being coddled. My question is, with Johnny Manziel and what he does and his off-field antics, does he look at this situation? Do you think he looks at this situation as, well, Josh Gordon's getting away with this stuff, so I'm just going to do what I want to do, regard the outcome of it? So I was kind of thinking what you guys thought of that, is if the Browns is handling those two situations properly and how it's going to turn out.
I mean, I certainly would think it would be remiss to say that Josh Gordon is getting away with it. He cost himself two games last year. He's going to cost himself again some games this year. And we've heard, Joel Corey, the former NFL agent who was on with us from CBSSports.com, estimated that Josh Gordon has cost himself about $20 million, maybe more. So I don't think Johnny looks at that situation and says he's getting away with it. Let's not forget, Johnny Manziel, even though we may not enjoy the parting, and again, I didn't like the last look we saw from him, he's not doing anything that is, A, illegal in the world, like against the law as an adult in this country, nor is he doing anything that is illegal under the rules of the collective bargaining agreement for players and what they're supposed to do and how they conduct themselves. So
right. He's
not violating rules or laws. Josh Gordon violated rules and laws. And there's a big difference there, in my opinion.
Huge difference between the two of them. I don't, Don, really, see the correlation that Johnny could perceive if he's getting away with something and so on and so forth. So, therefore, that's my excuse to behave the way I am. I think these are very separate things. I think what Johnny's doing is what Johnny's doing. What Josh has done, and by the way, the impending sense of doom that's still there. It's still there. Even if we can suggest to you that we feel, as time has gone on and based on our conversations internally, that the amount of time that this has not been announced might prove to be a better thing than him being suspended for the whole season. I think everyone connected with the Browns suspects something, expects something that isn't going to be pleasant in the way of losing Josh Gordon. So it doesn't. I don't think leave any sense or feel that he's getting away with something, getting away with murder, and I'm cool to do what I want to do. And as far as the handling of this, I do think the club is on top of it. I don't think it's a loose net. I don't think there's a sense of guys can just do what they want to do. I think there will be and has been more of a clamp down sense. And with regard to Johnny Manziel, the talk, the conversations, those have happened. And I think you take this thing in steps and then you figure out, when you've got an issue and a real problem to deal with, you deal with it. All right, we're just getting this thing rolling. Nate Ulrich is going to join us from the Akron Beacon Journal. That is coming up on this Football Friday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Don't matter what plans I got.